Welcome back to The Simple Plate, tales of local food made and produced by local people. Just think about this for a second. How can you turn your cold day around? What gets you out of bed and into the car? What complements your most comfortable chair with a book while tucked into the corner of the room? The answer is obviously coffee, but why does a cup of what is essentially hot water mixed with the seed of a foreign fruit shift our mood, hone our focus, and wake us up? On this episode, we meet with Sam LaVar of Duluth Coffee Company. We dive into the dark roast versus light roast myth, the numerous processes that ultimately affect the flavor of your coffee, and why Lake Superior's water makes for such a great cup. I'm going to go grab a refill, but let's meet at the table. I have at the table Sam LaVar. Hey, Sam.
How's it going?
Good.
Good, good.
Let's just hop right into it. So what's the history behind Duluth Coffee Company?
Duluth Coffee Company's been around for about 7 years, since 2012. Eric Faust is the founder and owner, and he still roasts all the coffee there today. He opened it, and he was actually a UMD student. He's a UMD alum now, and he was just roasting really out of the back of his car. He was selling it out of the back of his truck, and he roasted in his garage up in Hermantown. And from there, he established like a pretty good wholesale presence in the Duluth area. People were buying his coffee at farmers markets. They loved getting the coffee and bringing it home. So he established a pretty good customer base, worked with Lake Avenue Cafe. Big shout out there. They're one of the first customers that we worked with. And Red Mug over in Superior. It was pretty fun. And the business kind of grew organically until the point that he opened a storefront down in downtown Duluth. It's 105 East Superior Street. It's right on the corner of First Avenue and Superior Street. And from there, you know, he was serving coffee that he was roasting in-house. And it was a really small scale. He was roasting on a 3-kilo roaster. So it outputted, it was about 12 pounds per batch. And from there, he ended up getting a bigger roaster. And that roaster was a 12-kilo. And so the 12-kilo was that organic growth, just trying to meet the demand of the wholesale clients. The cafe was super slow. And if you imagine downtown Duluth 8 years ago, it was a much different scene.
Oh, yeah.
So a lot of the coffee was going out the door into other businesses to be used in cafes and restaurants. And with that 12-kilo, we were dropping about 20 pounds, 20 to 25 pounds of coffee per batch. And a roast process is, you know, anywhere from 9 to 12 minutes. And so it's pretty quick. But with a small roaster like that, you're having to roast a lot to keep up with a cafe itself. And at that point, then, downtown was growing, and so more and more people were coming into the cafe. And it was pretty organic in that sense that there's never been a bunch of promotion behind the business. It was just really good coffee. It was about then that he went down to Origin for the first time. And his first trip to Origin, as we call it, is where coffee is grown. And he went down to Columbia in the region of Huila. And down in Huila, they were hosting an auction. And at this auction, he bought the fifth best coffee out of Huila, Columbia. And he met Gabriel Munoz then. And it was a turning point for the business because it was the first time that he was actually able to see the positive influence of coffee. Coffee industry is a huge, huge industry. And frankly, most of the time, it's purchased on the commodity market. And it's driving prices lower and lower and lower. But there's a lot of people behind coffee. So Eric was able to meet Gabriel. He met Gabriel Munoz and created a relationship with him then that we still have today. We're actually going down to visit him on Friday. So that's pretty sweet. But the significant part with that was he saw the influence that he can make by purchasing somebody's coffee. And so he brought it back to Duluth, roasted it in Duluth, and completely changed the scope of the business. So he realized that in order to do real change in the industry, you need to roast a lot of coffee. Buying a couple bags of really nice coffee from a coffee farmer doesn't really do much other than give them like a good feeling. But at the end of the day, that's not going to keep them in business. You know, cost of production is really, really high down in Origin, and just selling a couple bags isn't going to cut it. So over the years, then, Eric has traveled to all coffee origins that we purchase from that are in the grocery stores. Just this past year, he's been to Colombia and Costa Rica and El Salvador, heading to back to Colombia here on Friday. We were in Brazil and Papua New Guinea. So this year, we've really amped it up in terms of travel. But that's something that we'll always continue to do, because the big part of it is we're trying to move farmers into a Farm Select program where we can purchase more coffee of all qualities and be able to sell it for those qualities and educate consumers behind that. It's pretty sweet.
That's incredible. Yeah, that's pretty incredible. And not everyone knows this, but coffee is primarily grown in regions near the equator. Is that correct?
Yes.
And it's actually a fruit. And coffee beans are actually the seeds of a cherry.
Yep. And it's that relationship between the cherry that is really, really astonishing when you have a cup of coffee. Like the cup of coffee that I'm drinking here is a naturally processed coffee. So what that means is they leave the coffee cherry on the seeds while they're being dried. So it creates a really, really bright, fruity, almost punchy flavor. It becomes very tea-like, almost wine-like in a natural process. And that's something that we really love doing is instead of, you know, taking the, we barely advertise roast levels on our coffees. Because for us, it's all about educating the consumers, telling them where their coffee came from, how it came into the cup that they have. And it's that process that really affects the coffee itself. So you've got that natural process, which is the cherry that's surrounding the seeds. And then there's a honey process that's typically done in Costa Rica. And it's sort of the in-between process. And so honey process, you remove the pulp of the cherry, but you leave the mucilage of the cherry on it. Mm. And so it's being dried, and it's going to be a faster drying process than it would be in a natural process. But that still, it ferments around the outside of the seed and creates a really, really nice sweet flavor. And then you've got the other process, which is the most commonly used process in the world. It's called wash process, where they use mechanical depulpers that remove the cherry and the mucilage, and they wash that mucilage off with water. And then it's dried after that. So the cup of the coffee changes drastically based on that relationship of the cherry. And you can get the same variety of coffee cherries that are processed differently, and they taste completely different in a cup of coffee. And that's what's pretty fun.
It's bizarre. So I think personally, I like to drink a cup of coffee that tastes as good as it smells. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there's so many different flavor profiles. And when it really comes down to it, what makes or breaks a cup of coffee for you?
Yeah, that's a good question. So when we go down to origin, we taste coffees in a traditional tasting method that's called cupping. And essentially, it's throwing coarse ground coffee, or it's coarse to medium ground coffee, into hot water and letting it steep. Almost like you would like a full immersion French press, but instead you're going to be doing it, and then you break the crust, the coffee sinks to the bottom, and you go through the smelling the dry aroma, the wet aroma, and tasting the coffee. It's a full sensory experience. It's pretty sweet. But this happens for all coffee that's traded across the world. And the really cool part about that is you can pull out these flavor profiles that are unique and different. So when we do open cuppings down at our shop, we host them every Tuesday at 10 a.m. and every Saturday at 2 p.m. And when we do these cuppings, we go through different origins of coffee or different processes. So people can come in, taste coffee with us, get to know the origin, get to know the process. But when we're down in origin, say Colombia this next week, we'll be tasting Colombian coffees from the same region. And that's when you really have to dial in your palate. And you're pulling out differences of little florals in coffee, some sweetnesses, some brightness. Now, interestingly enough, one of the highest attributes in cupping is acidity. And acidity is actually a really good thing in coffee. Acidity is like the flavor of acidity rather than the pH scale. So not talking like acid versus base, we're talking flavor profile. So something that is high in acidity is typically going to be really sweet and bright and fruity. And so a natural process always has higher acidity notes, and that's why it's so much more expensive and it's such a better cup.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's so interesting. So there's this myth that dark roast is less caffeine than a light roast. Is that true?
It's a myth. It's a long conversation. It actually...
what's the short of it,
The short of it is it all has to do with extraction. So at the end of the day, darker roast is going to be less dense than a lighter roast coffee because you're roasting, you're carbonizing, bringing closer and closer to carbon or to ash. And so you're actually roasting substance out of the coffee. Now, some will say that you can roast caffeine content out of coffee. Now, that's not, it's not false, but at that point, you're bringing it so close to combustion that even the darkest of the dark roasts aren't really roasting off that much caffeine. It's very unnoticeable. Now, the interesting part is that if you take the same coffee, take a Colombian coffee, and you were to cold brew that coffee, so coarse ground, letting it steep with cold water overnight, versus brewing it in a hot cup of coffee, the caffeine concentration is much different. So that's where it really has to do with the extraction process in itself. Mm. You can change the caffeine content based on the temperature of the water, your grind size, the contact time with the water and the temperature. So there's a lot of variables that go into it. So whenever somebody comes into the cafe or if I have a customer ask, like, which one has the higher caffeine? I say, well, they basically all have the same amount of caffeine. Now, to go deeper on that, too, is that if you look at the main two varieties of coffee, you've got Arabica and Robusta coffee. Robusta is typically higher caffeine content than Arabica is. So a lot of times people are going to be doing blends with Robustas, a lower quality coffee, to bring caffeine content up and bring it higher. So each coffee, kind of like trees, you know, each coffee variety has different characteristics, and sometimes that's caffeine itself. So before it comes down to roast, there's a lot that happens, whether it's the variety of coffee, it's the blend of coffee that you're roasting. There's a lot that can affect the caffeine content rather than just roast.
So there's a lot more going on.
Totally.
Than we even thought about.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I would say we've gone through different waves of coffee industry. And in some aspects, it really mimics like what's going on in the craft industry with craft beer. And something that that we always look back on is the fact that we've conditioned consumers to order cups of coffee by roast. And so now we're in this education point where we're trying to tell people that there's much more to coffee than just a roast level. Because as a roaster, it's our job not to ruin the potential that the coffee has. All we can do is highlight the potential. There's really no making it any better at the roast level. It's kind of like cooking. You really can't take a really nice chunk of meat and make it any better than what it potentially can be.
Right.
And so it's the same principle with roast. And that's why whenever the conversation steers towards roast with consumers, we always try to bring it back to the cup of coffee, back to the origin, back to the process, back to the variety that's there.
Right. I think that's the most important part. I mean, knowing where it came from. And you guys are doing a great job of telling the stories of where the origin is and who it actually is, like,
yeah,
calling them up by name.
Yeah, and that's the fun thing is as we've done more trips to origin, we've gotten to know people.
And those are your friends, too.
And yeah, they're friends. You know, I can shoot people a message on Instagram or WhatsApp. And that's sort of the fun part for us is the connection side of the industry, is being able to connect with like-minded people that want to change coffee for the same reasons that we do. Because again, it is a huge, huge industry. And for the most part, it's traded on just really economically unsustainable prices. And so when you look at the commodity industry, right now it's hitting like a dollar per pound on the commodity industry. Our coffees that we're purchasing are at very minimum 2 to 3 times. And at the maximum, we just had an El Salvador coffee that we purchased at auction and we bought it for $35 a pound. And that's green. So there's a lot that goes into it after the green purchase, but it's a very expensive coffee. And, you know, that is auction, so it's going to be inflated price. But what it shows is it shows that there are markets for these really higher quality coffees.
People are willing to pay that much.
For sure, for sure. And because they're buying it for the right reasons. They're buying it with traceability. And that's one of the big reasons that we don't do blends of coffee. We're trying to make sure that the coffee is tried and true to origin as possible.
It's brilliant. Not separating or compromising flavor in any form.
Yeah. And so when we get a new coffee and we typically do, you know, multiple roasts and do sample roasts and be able to taste them, make tiny little adjustments in coffee. And I think the misconception with coffee roasting too is it's like a temperature, but it's actually a relationship between time and temperature. And so most roasts are done in the same amount of time, but it's at different heats at different points of the development within the coffee. So it's not as clear as most people think, like mm-hmm. a darker roast is a higher drop temp. Yes, but it's actually longer development after the crack. So yeah, there's a lot that goes into it.
Gotcha. I'm going to bother you with the roast question then.
Yeah.
So we were talking about the roasting process, the caffeine, how caffeine is affected within the beans. Coffee beans are exothermic, so they heat from the inside and they need to be cooled right away. They go into that tray. But before we get into that, you get the white bean bag.
Mm-hmm.
What's the process? Just the short version.
Yeah, take you through the process. So we receive bags. Shout out to Cafe Imports. All of our
big shout out.
Yeah, big shout out. All of our coffee comes through Cafe Imports. Really close with them. We travel with them all the time. They do a really, really good job importing coffee and making sure that it's at moisture content that is going to be stable, because that's the number one. When coffee comes to us, it's green, and it's anywhere from 11 to 13% moisture. If it's too moist, coffee will ferment. It'll mold. It'll get all funky. You can even get sprouting in coffee. And then there's also, if it's too dry, it'll get super baggy. And then you can get really gross tasting coffee if it's way dried out. And it'll also char and roast super fast. Mm. So that's the first step, is making sure that coffee is coming to us at the right moisture level. And it comes in a big jute bag, or like a big burlap bag. Depending on the origin, any of the bags are 130 pounds to 160 pounds. And up until this year, we now have a tractor that helps us carry them in. But we would throw them on our shoulder, carry them into the roastery, and throw them down on the ground. And there's a lot of manual process involved in it. But all the bags within the jute or the burlap is, it's called a Grain Pro bag. And it's this big green plastic, heavy-duty plastic bag. We end up just reusing them for garbage bags within the shop because they're super heavy-duty.
Nice.
But we pour the green coffee then into our hopper. And this hopper is essentially it's like a conveyored system that brings the coffee from ground level all the way up to the top of the roasting machine, where there's a huge funnel. And so that's that drum hopper. The green coffee is then going to be sitting up there. Now, the important part is that at this point, the roaster has already been it's been hot. That roaster has to be super, super hot, because if you were to drop coffee into a cold roaster, it takes forever to heat up, and then it's going to be really inconsistent. So we typically let it run for hour and a half before we even roast a batch of coffee in it.
It's a big, and it's cast iron too, so you really have to.
Yeah, it's a big, big piece of metal, and it's not direct flame. So this roaster is a roaster from U.S. Roasting Corps out of Oklahoma City. There's many different types of roasters, but in this one in particular, there's no direct flame on the cast iron, so it's actually heating it evenly throughout it. It's basically using an air chamber, but it also means that it takes a while to heat up. And it's this roaster that we have now is a 70-kilo roaster. So it's a huge, huge roaster. We output anywhere 100 to 120 pounds per batch. And so it's a little less than a full bag. We typically just load in 120 pounds, and after the moisture is dropped out of it, then it's around 100 to 110, depending on the roast. And so once it's staged and loaded, all that green bean is loaded up in the top hopper. And from there, what we do is we open the chute, and all the coffee drops into the drum, and the drum is already spinning. So it's spinning so that it makes sure that coffee doesn't tip. And tipping is where you'd get really roasted on one edge of the coffee and not completely roasted all the way through. And so at that point, the temperature of the drum drops significantly, because you're adding that cold, moist substance into the drum roaster itself. So the temperature drops. And it'll start to naturally climb then. And we are only operating with a little bit of gas at this point. So it's not like full bore. But once the coffee starts carrying, then we really charge up the roast. And once the coffee is, all the moisture is being released from the beans themselves, it'll go through stages, yellowing stages, and it'll start to crack. And that cracking is really the first indicator of its development. It's meaning that it's dried out from there, and now you got to develop the coffee. And this is where you can really over-roast coffee. This is where you can bake coffee if it's under-roasted, and it would take too long, and then it's like almost tastes like potatoes, kind of starchy and cardboardy. So you really have to like manage the roast, and like I said before, it's a scale of temperature and time, all dependent on the coffee itself. A lot of times bag to bag, we'll have to change the roast a little bit depending on the moisture, also the atmosphere. So like what you were talking about with the cooling tray, after the coffee is dropped, there's a cooling tray that air is pressed from the bottom, and there's paddles that are rotating the coffee around it. Cool it down as fast as possible.
And that halts the process.
Yes. So that stops the development of the coffee. Now, the cool part is we live in Duluth, Minnesota. So we have a huge garage door that we open the garage door.
You just prop it open a little bit, yeah.
And we keep it propped, and it cools very fast. In the summer, we obviously have more difficulty with that. But in the winter, yeah, the cooling process is super, super fast because it's freezing cold in Duluth.
One of the upsides of living in Duluth.
Yes, one of the many. In the great water.
Is there anything else you want to leave us with or plug before we get out of here?
Something, too, on that note is talking about water. Water is something that the coffee industry is really starting to bring to light. And what I mean by that is for a long time, people have been talking about, you know, the coffee itself in terms of extraction, like your grind size, how much coffee, your dose of coffee, and then they talk about the temperature of water and all this. But a big factor of anything is the water that you're using. And so if you look at, you know, there's a reason that we have so many breweries here in Duluth, and the reason is because we have really great water. And so us sending our coffee down to, say, Iowa, and they use our coffee in a coffee shop down there, it completely tastes different than what you'd be having up here. And so we're going to be starting to cold brew coffee in cans next year, and we're going to be releasing cans of Colombian Huila coffee come April of next year. We're working actually with one of the local breweries to do all the brewing of the cold brew, and it's using Lake Superior water. So it's Colombian coffee brewed with Superior water, and it maintains a really awesome product then.
That's like the fruition of the entire process.
Yes.
From the origin and Duluth, it's a combination of those two.
Yeah, it's a full combo. That's the funny thing is, you know, we sell beans of coffee, so it's hard for us to really talk about the beautiful area Duluth that we live in and what it affects in the coffee itself. But now with cold brew product, we definitely will be able to.
Sweet. Any last plugs?
I think that's about it.
Sweet. Well, Sam, thanks for joining me, and we'll see you next time.
Sounds good. Thank you.
I want to thank Sam for coming in and helping us better understand what we're drinking and who makes it happen. You can listen to our full conversation online at KUMD.org under the Northland Morning tab, where you can also leave comments or questions. This episode of The Simple Plate is written and produced at KUMD by Mark Idstrom, with music from Andy Hallock and Pola, with support provided by Whole Foods Co-op of Duluth. The Simple Plate is also located wherever you find your podcasts, so you can take us with your ride home from work, or share us with your friends and family. On the next episode, we have Randy Hansen, an agricultural educator and one of the most brilliant minds I've spoken with regarding local food systems and the sustainable implications of sourcing locally, and how all of that affects the big picture. That's next time on The Simple Plate, here on KUMD.